Hey guys, welcome to episode 75 of the JV Club. One more quarter and we have got a dollar's worth of episodes on our hands. I'm very excited about that. Can't think of a better way to celebrate our 75th episode than with the luminous, marvelous, beautiful Sarah Watkins. Yikes, that was a little, maybe that was a little extreme. I hope I didn't make anyone uncomfortable. Sarah Watkins, such an amazing musician. What a great guest. I am so excited to say that we will be playing at the end of the podcast one of her songs. It is You and Me, and it is on the Sun, Midnight Sun album, which is definitely available on iTunes because I recently gifted it to Heather W., friend and fan of the podcast. Dear, dear friend, dear, dear Sketchfest. I'm going to call you like an associate producer, but I'm not even sure what that means. Let me get some shout outs out there. Kate A., I want to thank you so much for your marvelous, marvelous email. Emily Linden has a wonderful project called The Unslut Project. The Unslut Project, and we'll be talking about it more in a future episode. But in the interim, I encourage you to go to Kickstarter, check out The Unslut, that's UNSLUT, Unslut Project, that involves... It involves self-esteem for younger women. It involves kind of debunking some myths about stereotyping and is all around just a really great project. So check that out. I want to thank from the Jackie Nerdist page, as always, Todd, Mark, Paul, Maria, Al, PJ, Amy, Miller, Andy, and Scott. Some of you feel a little shy when I shout you out at the beginning of an episode. You were just going to have to get used to it, guys. What can I say? I'm appreciation. What can I say? I'm appreciation personified. That's not far from the truth. On the Facebook page, Deb, Arcane, and Shmoo, Liz, if I've missed anyone, I apologize. I'm throwing this together before a special guest comes over that I'm going to be podcasting for a future episode. I'm very excited about it. I think that's it. I gave you information on Sarah. I gave you some shout outs. What more do you need from me? Had a great time at Outside Lands in San Francisco. Very excited to start planning Sketchfest. I can't believe it's that time again already. And as many of you Cora fans already know, the air date has been announced for Cora. But now that I'm saying that, I suddenly realize that I don't remember what it is. I think it's September 13th. Is that right, guys? I'm checking Twitter really quickly because I don't want to have to re-record this entire thing. I'm pretty sure that it's the 13th. This is me killing time while I look this up. Oh my God, this is just ridiculous. Isn't it the 13th, guys? Yes, 9/13. Phew, thanks for hanging in. I'm nothing if not unprofessional. I've established that before. Please enjoy this episode, and I'll talk to you soon.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Getting right into it with Sarah Aloysius Bogdanovich Jensky Watkins. I can only assume that that's your full name.
Jensky. Ulrika is my middle name.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Ulrika?
It's Swedish.
That's a great middle name.
Thank you.
Were you named after someone in your family? Oh, in fact, in adorable frames, too.
Oh, that's a... Check out that. It's a porcelain frame.
No.
With no glass or anything, but you slide the little picture down the back of it.
Oh, you sure do.
Yeah.
This is guys, I will take a picture of this, but this is a beautiful porcelain frame with a rose on each corner.
Oh, yeah.
Because anything it's less would not
thorough.
Be enough roses.
Yeah.
And there is this a pony?
That's Coco. Who's my horse.
Oh, Coco.
Was
Coco fully grown?
Yes, he was.
He just looks small to me, but maybe it's because it's a tiny frame.
The picture is small.
I don't know how size
it's not,
works.
So
you're telling me this is an actual size. He's not an actual size tiny horse that's 1 inch tall.
No, he was a little taller than that.
Okay, I understand. Is he still...
No, he's passed on.
Nickering with us?
Nickering.
Isn't that like a thing that horses are described?
Really?
You know how I know that? It's possible I've said... If I've brought this up on the podcast before, that's odd. But I used to read Nancy Drew books. My mom gave me all her Nancy Drew books. Mm-hmm. And I, for some reason, I specifically remember that
And it might just, I might be getting confused because I think her boyfriend's name was Ned Nickerson now that I'm saying it, but I'm pretty sure that a horse nicker, like I've seen, like I've read in books, like the horse nickered softly at her.
Right, that could be.
Nickered.
I mean, neighing is a thing.
Yeah, but neighing is like nickered louder. Is like,
okay.
Isn't neighing more of like a, nickering is more like a, I can't even do it.
I can take that. I'll get that.
I don't even know what sound I just made.
You made a nicker.
It was a little bit like I was hawking a loogie. It wasn't like a, I didn't do that.
That's better.
I was like a, I did like a weird asthmatic.
Do you want to go sit?
So nickering is when a horse is very sick, evidently, according to me. I'm taking off my shoes, Sarah. I don't have a choice. You already beat me to the punch.
Off, man.
Ulrika.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone in your family with a name?
Yeah,
Ulrika?
a great aunt.
Okay,
a great aunt in Sweden who I don't know.
Do you have much family still in Sweden?
There are some cousins.
I really want to go to Sweden bad.
I have been to Stockholm a couple of days, but I've never met my cousins over there.
Was that on like on a tour?
I think we've all forgotten about each other at this point. Like the connector, the connector generation was my grandparents' generation.
Yeah,
and I think that those folks have
passed
on.
It's never too late.
Maybe. I mean, it would be amazing. I know they live up.
You gotta get back in touch with them. If I had any family living anywhere besides the United States, I would track them down post haste.
It would be great. I would love to at some point, but we'll see.
Because all the Swedes speak English anyway.
They do.
So many of the European countries are just like super proficient and...
They speak much better English than I do.
Exactly, exactly. Ulrika, okay, I like it. I don't think that I knew that you had that much Swedishness in you.
I doubt that you did. A lot of people think that I have Asian in me.
Oh,
like,
really?
Strangers have come up to me 3 times and said, ask me about my ethnicity and... That's then they're like, no, you're Asian.
I guess I could see that a little bit, but I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah.
What template we put together.
I know this.
I never would have seen that or thought that had you not just said that.
Yeah.
So I'm not one of those strangers who's going to impose myself on you in probably an inappropriate and privacy disturbing way. Yeah. Listen, I know how much you have against Asian people. But it is weird.
I take it as exotic. That's how I would like
for
to
sure.
take it.
For sure. I always get excited when people say, are you from... people think that I'm Swedish or that for some reason that
It sounds fancy.
Sounds better than like Anglo, French,
English.
Irish, Scottish.
Yep.
Like that kind of muttness seems kind of boring. Yeah. Sweden's good. My middle name, thanks for asking, is Maureen. very Irish. See, super snore. But I am named, my middle name is after one of my aunts who I could not love more. So it is good.
That is good.
A not great aunt. I mean, she's a great aunt, but she's my mom's
sister.
She's
spectacular.
Thus, she's not my great aunt. She's my regular aunt.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how that works.
Regular aunt.
How did the term great come to mean like a generation apart from you? You know what I mean?
I don't know.
Great, your grandparents, your great and grand, mind you.
Great.
My great grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
Those are really positive words.
Maybe because they've survived. The mere fact that they're still alive.
I like it.
Must be some karmic testament to their,
I like it.
Their greatness.
I can get on board for that.
Sure.
Is it possible that instead of great, great grandparents, we should start saying our super great grandparents? And then after that, it's like your superb, super great grandparents. That's like how you stretch back further and further in the generations.
As we continue to stay alive for hundreds of years.
Yeah. Things are going to have to shift if we keep living this long.
Patenting some options.
This is going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
We really nailed this thing down.
Done.
Thank you so much for driving all the way here.
Oh, I was happy to.
How do you want me to acknowledge where you came from, or is that creepy? Do you have somebody who's going to drive to the place where
I'm
you
sure
were?
It's on.
You were coming from Carlsbad?
Yeah, Carlsbad near San Diego. That's where I live.
Yeah, so you drove all the way up here.
I did.
You have something else going on.
Yeah, I come up to Los Angeles a lot.
Yeah.
And like many, many times a week. So it's really nothing. And. So you shouldn't think that you're special at all.
I know that's where that was going. I want you to know I'm humbled. I'm suitably humbled.
I'm going to Evan Schletter's house after this. So
yeah, no, he's already ages better than I am. I'm like your friend. He's like your great friend. Because your friendship has survived longer. I'm trying to turn into the grandparents thing. See, I'm trying to come full circle. It's not working.
So yeah, I know I came up from Carlsbad. I lived down there and... I'd like to get up here. I'd like to live up here.
How long have you lived down there?
That's where I'm from. Yeah. So
your
there's
family.
Been time.
Mm-hmm. All lived down
my,
there.
My parents live in Vista, which is nearby, and cousins and things. And so, and I really love it down there. And when I was touring a lot, it's a great place to come home to. It's really a great place to be off the road. But I'd like to start working up here more and touring a little less.
Is it like San Diego? I mean, what's the vibe?
It's North County. It's a little bit more chill than San Diego.
Is it near the beach?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and...
Like, will I pass through
it's where Legoland
if I'm
is.
In the... Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
So when you're
say
on the
no
5 and you
been.
Go past... You go through 20 miles of Camp Pendleton, beautiful nothingness. Mm-hmm. There's Oceanside, which is the first town, and then Carlsbad is the next
town. So I recently was discussing being on the surf liner, I guess with Autumn Reeser, because she is also from... Maybe Oceanside. That's
is
funny.
She really?
Man, I've had this weird...
I might have discussed that.
Yeah,
because
you guys know each other.
A little bit.
I'm having a lot of like twofers lately where suddenly out of nowhere I'll have like two back-to-back people. Well, this isn't exactly back-to-back, but close. Two back-to-back Texans and then like no Texans for a long time. And then two back-to-back Coloradans and no Coloradans otherwise. Now I have two almost back-to-back San Diegans. But I wouldn't say you're a San Diegan. You're a Carlsbadian.
I say San Diegan. In the county.
Okay.
It counts.
North County.
Yeah, North,
North County.
County.
So it's super chill. And did you grow up like surfing and stuff too?
I grew up in the water. I grew up bodyboarding, which is the uncool cousin of surfing. Because that's what my brother did.
We
so
call it
I,
boogie boarding.
Boogie boarding, yes. But when we take it a little
cool
bit more
sounding.
Seriously, we bodyboard.
Okay.
We changed the name. My brother got into that. When he's 4 years older than I am, I think I was like 13 when he started to really get into that, and or maybe younger. And so I just tagged along, really.
Did
and
you wear with boogie
bodyboarding? Please
really
have some respect.
So sorry, I am so sorry. I do not mean to make a mockery, but I do enjoy bodyboarding. Unfortunately, I always call it boogie boarding, so this is just something I have to get through. Did you? I'm even laughing about it because I'm thinking about the fact that I was the sort of dilettante at best, wearing like, you know, my shabby one suit, you know, like one piece bathing suit as a child. Boogie boarding mm-hmm. and just hoping to get some, you know, momentum. And so I was about to ask you if you wore like a surfing suit the way
you
wear surfers
fins.
Do.
You wear fins.
You do.
Well, the surfing suit, I think, is what you're referring to as the wetsuit, which
thank
is...
really? There's I'm no, batting 1,000 right now.
There's no Paul F. Tompkins of water.
there should be.
There should be. Somewhere where there's no sharks, perhaps. But the wetsuit is to keep you warm.
Yeah.
But in the summer times,
sadly,
don't always
I do need
it.
You to explain things.
So
to
me. A lot of other people will just wear shorts or a bathing suit,
even when they're surfing. I feel I always see people in wetsuits when they're surfing.
Yeah, usually. I mean, a lot of times, especially up here, it's a little colder.
Pacific Coast Range is really cold. Let's just get right down to it. Even in that, I mean, I did spend summers.
I'm
going
glad
to
we finally stopped beating around the bush.
Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here. I'm not afraid to say the Pacific Ocean is cold. Up till this point,
well,
I was terrified.
Well, you were until now.
I was terrified. But I finally come clean and admitted that I do think it's cold. But it is. I only grew up with the idea of the ocean being one temperature. I don't know about you, but like, how much did you know about the East Coast when you were growing up on the West Coast?
Not much.
I think I always just thought the ocean's cold no matter where you are until someone was like,
when
you know,
you're
the
little,
Atlantic
though,
Ocean's
it doesn't
warm.
Feel cold, does it? Like,
it's true.
When I remember when I was little, I remember being, we would always go to, we'd have bonfires, like, you know, the family friends would get together and you have bonfires. Everything you eat has tons of sand in it.
Uh-huh.
And you're biting down on sandwiches,
just
like
grit.
The crunchiest, grittiest sandwich.
People, I'm sure, break teeth and stuff sometimes.
Really? Do they must have like real? The sand in Arizona is a lot crunchier.
Oh, I'm thinking of broken glass. I'm sorry. No, but I think
marbles.
Sometimes when you bite something, a little pebble or something, if like you're eating salad that wasn't washed all the way, it's like super organic from a farmer's market.
Have
you bite
broken,
down on a piece of
have
grit.
Have you broken some teeth on
Sarah?
Spinach?
I have broken a tooth on a nut before.
Well, yeah,
a
but
molar.
Not on spinach. Not on spinach grit.
I'll grant you that. I think I have a paranoia about it. Bye, Maria.
Bye.
Maria just made a surprise appearance on the podcast. Maria is a dear, dear family friend who comes and helps me make the house look pretty so that guests can say things like, you have a pretty house.
So can I go out and look around now?
Yeah, you can. Now that now that she's leaving. God, that's kind of weird. I got to acknowledge right now, I hate to change the subject really quickly, but I did not grow up with enough money to ever, ever, ever think twice, like even consider having somebody who comes in and helps you clean and stuff.
Oh, no.
And so I have, I do have like weird issues with the, like, I still feel kind of odd about it, even though she's a family friend. I love her. She's like a second mom. I love when I see her. We hang out. She like, we like figure out like ways to sew stuff together and stuff like that. So it's not even like, and it, by the way, it wouldn't matter if, you know, that doesn't make me a better person than if you have a cleaning lady who comes in once a week or whatever. Right. But I do have this weird feeling in me. Like, I never thought.
I feel that.
I never thought I would have someone help me come in and clean.
Because you have these weird, first of all, I just got a Roomba, which is my equivalent.
Oh, I tried a Roomba.
It's awesome.
Okay. See, I couldn't, it didn't go well for me.
It went really well for me.
That's great for you.
But so this is that's my guilt-free cleaning solution. But it but there are those weird things where you like you still are holding on to how you used to perceive things, even though they might have been incomplete ideas of what it meant to, like, your idea when you were a teenager or your early 20s or whatever, what it would mean to have someone help you clean your house is like, not necessarily the truth of things.
Yeah, I
you're still holding on to
it. Yeah, totally. I mean, I don't know about you, but like, I really had the, in my mind, because I, like, all the kids I, you know, went to school with, or so many of them were Hispanic or Black, or, and I was in kind of a minority, and I associated the idea of like having anyone, in this case, and in California, a lot of the time they are Hispanic people for whatever reason. That, like, if you were a white person and you brought someone Hispanic in to clean your house, you were a dick.
Right.
Like, you were a rich asshole, and there was a class war, and you thought you were better than people. And I was so, like, vehemently opposed to that. And then, you know, then it was like, but hey, Maria can totally come help you, and you can pay her, and that's what she does, and you guys can hang out. Like, it, so it became something totally different. And now even friends of mine who are, you know, school teachers who have no money, who live in studio apartments, have somebody who comes and helps them clean because they're never home or whatever. But I still,
because it's worth it.
But
because
I felt it when she came to say goodbye, and I said goodbye. I felt myself get like, okay, I've got to talk about this on the podcast because I feel weird that I'm saying goodbye to my cleaning lady, and her name's Maria. I'm just going to put it out there right now and say, I worry that someone out there has the thoughts that I had when I was younger, and it's like, oh, la-ti-da, Janna can't clean her own house.
Yep.
What an asshole.
Not as well as she does, that's for sure. She does a good job.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
She's amazing. But we both found this thing on my window, I'll show you before you leave, that looks like almost like a pressed leaf pattern. It's just white, but it's on the window, and it's this really pretty, almost like a piece of a fern or something that's white. And neither one of us has washed it off the window because we don't know what it is, and it's really pretty. But I kind of think it might have been like a really gross bug that just hung out there for a while, like almost like a millipede or something.
It's not just the like a suction cup of some kind, some climbing vegetation.
I'll show you. I'll show you, because it's in a weird spot. I can't account for it otherwise. So anyway, I still feel uncomfortable with the conversation.
Please don't.
I feel uncomfortable about being uncomfortable. That's my many layers of feeling uncomfortable on the podcast about Maria.
Be at ease.
I do love my Maria. See, I just said it like I owned her. God, this is getting worse and worse, guys. Worse and worse. Everything I say is getting worse. Sarah, let's get back to you. So you didn't have anyone who cleaned your house when you were growing up.
We were broke.
You were broke, but happy in Carlsbad, bodyboarding all the live long day.
Yeah.
But that's your brother who's older than you. But what's your family composition like from when you were an adolescent?
I grew up in a town called Vista, which is just inland of Carlsbad. And my parents are both teachers. My dad taught middle school for 35 or something years. Bless him.
Love it. My dad taught high school for 25. Ooh. Same. Yeah.
My gosh. And then my mom teaches. She works with special ed kids, another teacher as well.
Bless her.
I know, both of them. And we grew up in this house, you know, with 3 months off in the summertime because of the traditional schedule. So we go camping a lot in the summers. And then I started playing music. My parents put us in lessons. Put my brother in piano lessons, and then the teacher's son, played in a bluegrass band every week, once every Saturday night, from like, you know, 7 to 10 p.m. or whatever. a marathon of three or four hour set. Love it. In a pizza parlor. And so that would just kind of became what we did as a family on Saturday nights. It's like cheap entertainment, and Sunday was our family day, so it was like getting us into Sunday.
And did you have, I can't believe I'm about to ask this because I feel like I must already know the answer, but what I want to say is this, and for those of you who don't know Sarah's work, I congratulate you for what you're about to find out is your new favorite music, because she's an amazing musician. Her family is a family of amazing musicians. There are many opportunities to listen online and also live when they do go out and tour, and sometimes you're up here at Largo. Mm-hmm. But it's so For those of us who maybe don't have as close of a knit family, or who don't have a family who did stuff like that together, yeah, much less create this beautiful, iconic, kind of traditional, you know, like the McGarrigles or, you know, these other iconic families who sing and perform together. Did you have any sense of that as you were a child? Were you like, this is really special and different, and like, there aren't that many people doing this?
Not until later. I mean... No, because when you're a kid, your world is so small, you just kind of deal with what's in front of you, right? Yeah. So, but we would, like, I loved, the camping trips that we did before music happened, we'd go to Colorado, and my parents they'd be really outdoorsy types, and they went backpacking and things before we came around. And then I'm the second child, so a lot of that stuff.
Of how many?
Just two.
Just the two of you, yeah.
So a lot of that stuff fell by the wayside, but we still did these trips. And it just transferred over to bluegrass festivals. So once we started playing music, and I should say the band that played, we became friends with them, and they would have us on stage to like sing songs that I learned in kindergarten, and like it was really it's a really family friendly kind of environment.
Love that so much. I'm so envious.
It was really fun. And but I mean, it still happens quite a bit. I look around and there'd be, you know, there's still bluegrass and pizza parlors. And
I guess that I did not make the association with. I guess I wouldn't necessarily think, you guys, let's go check out some bluegrass. Where's
for whatever
the
reason,
Shakey's?
It's consistent. I think it's like cheap family kind of, kids can run around, and there's usually a stage for sports or something. Like there's some, I guess, like a viewing. A lot of times there's like a big screen or whatever. There used to be. Anyway. I remember
the name of the pizza parlor that
it's called That Pizza Place, and it's in Oceanside.
That Pizza Place, very
clever. That Pizza Place, right?
Meta.
And but the band would play, and the kids would like, you know, play balloon volleyball, and I would fall asleep at like 8 o'clock on the bench, just like straddling a bench and just sleep for the rest of the night, and then you know,
I love it.
But it was really fun, and started playing because it looked normal, and I think that's a big deal for kids, especially, you know. It's not this, music shouldn't be this thing outside of you. It should be more integrated into real life, if it can be, you know.
Indeed, indeed.
In a tangible way.
So it doesn't feel so much like, well, mom and dad said I had to get a thing, so we
or
signed
like,
up for a thing, and
totally,
every hour
yeah.
I go to this
for
weird
some reason,
woman's house.
No,
and
we never listen to classical music, but I guess I'm going to learn how to play it because,
yeah,
you know, violin, because that's just what you do. And
yeah.
I grew up playing bluegrass, which was a little bit just as obscure, come to find out. But I had to deal with that in later years.
Well, what was the first, because you play multiple instruments, so did you
mostly
say already
just
what
fiddle
was
though?
Okay.
Mostly just fiddle, yeah.
And that's and do you remember your process of figuring out what was going to be your instrument and stuff?
I asked to play fiddle when I was four, and my mom tried to pawn me off on flute, which mm-hmm. I'm
And what was her reasoning for that?
I don't know. I think maybe it was sounded quieter or like just more
as parents,
more
I guess that's
normal.
Fair.
Or maybe that's, I don't know. She's giving me options. Uh-huh. But and then when I was six, I took Suzuki lessons. It's a great way to start. It's a classical method. And they teach you the really great fundamentals. They've got a really solid method for kids. And then after I got the basics down, they just like beat down the door of Dennis Kaplinger, who became my fiddle teacher, and just was like, please will you teach her? Please will you teach her? Please will you teach her? And then he did finally. He wasn't a professional teacher, he was a professional player.
And he was down there as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah, he
convenient.
Was the guy that I saw who made me want to play fiddle.
Yeah. So you even thought, because, I mean, this is good. This might be the dorkiest I've ever been on any episode. Probably because I'm such a huge fan of your music, so I'm just geeking out. But But even calling it a fiddle is like, that's already, you set yourself apart to be doing something other than like, I play the violin. You know what I mean? But I know it's so charming because that's just not how kids think of instruments, I don't think. I really do think that unless you come from a musical family, it is this. I loved what you said earlier about this thing that's a part that's out there somewhere.
Like, why would I want to do that? And for me, I was a really practical kid too, so... that would never have worked on me.
Do you think that teachers breed pragmatism in their kids? Because I feel like I was too. And I think so much of it had to do with my parents being educators, both of them.
It might have been. I was pretty, I was a total daddy's girl. And anything I could do to impress him was my goal. So like, if I felt like he wanted me to be tough, I'd be tough. I felt like he wanted me to like... Just, you know, so it was in my mind that I wanted to be like, the anti-girly girl.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily, he would have been fine with anything, you know, he would have, that's not at all. Now that I actually know him, that's not what he really wanted from me, but I had this idea that I wanted to be like, you know, in the workshop with him or building stuff or, you know, something like that. And I was a practical kid. So if something seemed aesthetic, just purely for like decoration, wasn't into it. Hats,
interesting.
They got to be practical. I'm not wearing a decorative hat.
It's very sunny and near the ocean. You do need to protect your skin.
You do, but don't wear one of those wimpy hats. It's not going to cover your face. If you wear a hat, wear a hat.
Yeah.
That's what I said.
That makes perfect sense to me. I can see why your father was so proud. If you're going to wear a hat, my daughter always used to say.
That's all I need from her.
She really had a good perspective.
No, I mean, I don't think he even knows that, but I'm just, you know, my brain, I'm imagining like 20 different scenes and hats are what came out.
I like it. It makes perfect sense to me. And we managed to fold it right back into the beach culture, which, as you know, I clearly know very much about, including talking about surfing suits. So in high school, how much of your life had to do with your family and playing music and bodyboarding? And then what was your...
Good job.
Thank you. What was your high school experience like, and how did that fold into all of this?
I was homeschooled in high school.
Well, there
have you had
you
a homeschooler? You probably have.
I don't know if I've had somebody who's been homeschooled through high school. I'm going to say nay, nay to that. This is very exciting.
Let me point you to Exhibit B.
Oh, Your Honor, I appreciate it. I'm not sure why the judge would be providing evidence in a courtroom. I know as little about court as I do about...
I think I was... This is 95, so I was 14. Oh, that's me. I'm the one with the
perm.
Oh,
yes, I can tell that that's definitely you.
That was my friend Eric Youngdale's garage.
Yeah, that's like a working garage. What's going on? You guys are like inventing a formula for cold fusion.
Let me see. This might have been art class. Oh, this was art class. But in that same garage...
Why does it look... Okay, so it is a garage. I'm not crazy.
It's a garage. And we were all friends, and this was like a summer class.
So we took art
lessons from some other kids that were like 18 and 19, the Wojcinickis, the brothers. They were two good-looking brothers that
not
knew
to be confused
to,
with the
draw.
Wachowski brother and sister.
No.
Okay, so...
In that same garage, I had anatomy classes where we dissected... cats.
And who were all these different teachers?
Oh, these are all kids.
But I mean, like the people who were teaching the classes.
Oh, the art class was
That was just friends who would teach you anatomy, for example.
There are umbrella schools, and this was the umbrella school that I was in was Grace, and they there's a bunch of teachers that are signed up for it, and they're fully qualified teachers, and they kind of travel around the county, and there are little group centers where you can go in. For instance, I took really great classes from a guy named Greg Bears. I took a biology class from him in chemistry in somebody's garage that had been converted to a classroom, basically. And they had like sinks set up and everything. And it was once a week. And I had biology, and we dissected something in pairs every single week. And I loved Greg Bears. And it was like high school. It was all high schoolers together, like 9 to 12 grade.
I don't know if I've heard the term umbrella school before. So
it's a little bit more organized than just free independent homeschooling, where you send your grades into the state.
Okay,
you can organize a curriculum. You sort of decide your parents decide your curriculum. You can order books through them, and then you can send in your report cards and your grades and everything, so that it's all official. And So I was homeschooled. I went to private school through sixth grade, and I had a really hard time. And then
by hard time, do you mean that you were bullied, or do you mean that just the whole process of being in the school?
I wasn't bullied, but I was a total nerd. I did not make it easy on myself.
Yeah.
I was asking for it.
Good for you, though.
The practical thing again. Third grade, I broke my glasses in the middle, you know, like right on the bridge.
Yes.
No, that wasn't it. It was on the side. It was the arm this time. And my way of fixing it was to put scotch tape on it and hold the arm together because
you bet
they'll totally work.
Yeah.
Mom, you don't have to buy new glasses. I can just tape it. And she'd be like, are you sure that you don't want new glasses?
And she's like delicately holding up a VHS box of Revenge of the Nerds. Like, are you sure?
And I was like, no, look, it totally works. It's practical. It's like, it's fine. Like, don't worry about it, you know? And so she's like, okay.
And then you would go to school and they would be like, you're stupid.
That was fourth grade.
You're stupid. Your glasses are stupid.
It wasn't. I don't think I ever got like specifically picked on like that as much as just ignored.
The overlooked.
I know, but then I'd go away to these bluegrass festivals and I'd have all kinds of friends, lots of them being adults, and then other like nerdy bluegrass kids.
Yeah.
We'd have a great time. We have so much fun and total validation. And then I'd come home to school and I was like, oh man.
This again.
Gotta hang out with these kids.
And so do you remember the conversation that you had like with your parents when you were approaching seventh grade, getting out of that private school and what that was like?
Part of it was, I think they were probably thinking about it long before they brought it up to me. But it was a really cliquey school anyway, and there were some politics involved and some scandal, I think, up in the high ranks. And then, but also we were starting to travel a lot more, and I was still in this band, you know, I was eight when the Nickel Creek started. And so by the time I was in seventh grade, how old are you in seventh grade? Like 13?
I think maybe even just 12.
12? Yeah, 12.
12.
So we were, but festivals, bluegrass festivals start in the early summer and end in the late fall, like around September.
Mm-hmm.
And, I remember that the school wasn't super happy with us missing the first week of school and the last week of school.
What about your parents as teachers? Was that an issue for them?
They were fine with it. They're like, it's like the stuff you're doing is way more interesting than the first week of school where everyone's just getting how to pronounce your name.
But I mean, like, what about your parents as teachers? Like, were they having to miss the first and last weeks of school as teachers?
Because at that time, I'm not sure how that worked, actually.
Can we get them on the phone? This is very important. It's crucial. I cannot continue without them.
No, I'm not sure how that worked. I don't know. This one, they might have just taken like a week off or something. There was this one party in Texas that was really fun that we went to. It was at a place called Nickel Creek Ranch, which is where the name came from.
Oh, okay.
And it was at the foot of the Guadalupe Mountains. And it was just a week with all these great character people. And it was kind of like a family vacation, but there was music and we would play, but then it was just this huge, crazy, wacky group of people hanging out for a few days. And we would drive out there and it seemed like a really great opportunity at the time, a fun experience.
Absolutely.
So we did that a couple of times and that's what took me out of school, and the school didn't like that. So,
And like you said about going back into the school, and the difference between being surrounded by kids who are extremely specifically your own age.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like you really did have this kind of experience of agelessness, right? I mean, you must have sort of felt like...
Well, adults
are
always...
Who
I think adults were always nicer to me than the kids that I was around at school. Because it was a cliquey private school. Lots of like... I don't know if you did the thing where you coordinate with girls what you're going to wear the next day. So it's like black leggings... And like the white scrunchy socks, and then like the red scrunchy socks over that.
Because God knows we needed an extra pair of socks.
Because it's
back
really
then.
Cold.
Yeah.
But like, so that kind of stuff happened. And then, you know, girls, like, so one traumatic thing was I was at somebody's house and they were coordinating with this other girl. There were three of us. And then the two of the other girls changed the plan without telling me. So yeah. I showed up the next day, made an utter fool of myself wearing the wrong color socks. We were all supposed to be wearing the same thing. And they split.
Oh, my.
I know. So you can imagine that kind of trauma on a daily basis.
I can only imagine. I can only imagine the tragic. Horror.
It was tragic.
Those things are tragic.
For some reason, it really hurt. I mean, not for some reason. It totally hurt my feelings because you're being left out. It's an early way of.
See, I am impressed and appreciate the fact that you had that pragmatism and that you were practical, because I do feel like I will say this is a traumatic story that I've definitely never told before, and I still feel,
how do you still have
intense,
those?
I know, with as much as I know what you're thinking and what you're saying is, you fucking will not shut up.
No, that's not
how
what
you
I'm
have
saying.
Any stories,
but
left.
But you know, with the podcast,
it turns out that we all have like a multi, like so many experiences that I still feel like there's a lot that's untapped, like this gem. I feel such shame about this. It's probably one of the reasons I've never told it before, but I am really, as I've said, I'm batting 1,000 and I've made a fool of myself so many times already in this podcast episode. But my dad had friends who were much better off than we were. And I think he had gone to school with one of them. And they lived in like a really fancy neighborhood, and he was a dentist, and they had a lot of money, and they had a pool, and we would go over and hang out with them. And the daughter, who was my age, just had everything. You know, she had like, when everybody was into Guess jeans, she had like 8 pairs of Guess jeans. And when everyone was into, and so there was a point at which swatches were getting very, very popular, as they should have been and as they remain, because they're awesome. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't afford a swatch, and she had like 7 swatches. And this is probably when I was like 7, something like that.
Aww.
Maybe.
You were aware of things.
Yeah. Exactly. That's kind of where I'm going with this. And I was so aware, and I was so envious. And I remember thinking, I don't have even one, and I can't afford one. And if I took one, she probably wouldn't even realize it was gone, because she's has all the stuff. She just has so much stuff. And so I took one. And I felt so weird and bad about it. I just felt, I was like, it's that feeling where like your heart's in your throat the whole time. I had it. And then I like hadn't thought through, how am I going to account for where I got this? And you know, what comes next? I'm just going to sit and look at it in my room, because I can't wear it. So, and I was just like, and then I was horrified. And then I was like, I can't give it. Of course, I'm like in the car on the way home going, I shouldn't have done that. I wish I could get it back there, because now I don't know what I've done with this, what I'm going to do with this thing. And I got home and I didn't even want to do this, but like, I was like, well, now I have it. I guess I have to like figure out how to make it be a thing that I can have. So I snuck outside later that day, the same day that we had just been with them. I went outside and I like sprinkled some dust on it, like some dirt on it, to make it look like it had been on the ground. And I went inside and I was like, Dad, I just found this swatch. And my dad's like, oh wow. So this just was on the ground. I was like, yeah, it was just on the ground in front of the house. And he turns it over, and the girl's initials have been scratched into the back.
Wow.
And he goes, is this June's watch? And I just burst into tears. Aww. And I had to like the next day, like drive to her house with my dad. And I like, my face was beet red, and I had to hand it to her and say, I still feel so sad when I think about this.
I
had
know.
To look her in the eye and say, I took your watch. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I was so ashamed of myself. And it made me feel so much more poor than we even were. You know what I mean? To have to eat crow like that. But I really did feel like this tremendous remorse. And it was a really good lesson.
Yeah.
But ay, ay, ay.
Mm-mm. Do you think most kids steal something little? Like,
I do think that. I think most kids steal, especially like candy and gum
and
stuff from the store.
And
I did.
Candy.
I mean, I did steal stuff from like big department store kind of places, like Walgreens and stuff when I was a teenager, because I was a jerk. But I never stole from another person except that one time. And it just felt like, as much as you feel violated when someone takes your stuff, I felt
like your soul
I had
violated
myself
by
taking it. It was such an uncomfortable feeling.
Yeah.
Did you ever take anything?
I took chocolate chips from the bulk bin at Boney's.
At Boney's?
Uh-huh. It's a natural food store.
Of course it was a natural food store that you guys shopped. Please, bluegrass. Please.
They were, you know, Henry's? Do you ever heard of Henry's? Oh, well.
Is Henry's a great natural food store that I should know
Well,
about?
Henry's and Boney's were together, and they were, it was all Boney's, and then the brothers, they broke up.
How
There's
do you
only
spell
Henry's
Boney's?
Now. with an E-Y-S, I think.
Okay.
B-O-N-E-Y-S.
All right.
I had never thought of it as being funny until just now.
Yeah, it just sounds like, I just imagine someone being like, yeah, because you can't survive on hill food. Like, you're going to be too skinny. I mean, there are just a million jokes that you can make. None of them funny, by the way, but that wouldn't stop me.
I think, so anyways, that's what I did. And I told my brother, and then every time there were sirens outside, you know, like a car driving by, he'd be like, they're coming to get you. And I was, like, the first five times, I was so petrified. Like, And I went over it in my brain so many times, like, they probably weigh the bin. They weigh the stuff that comes out. They'll know there's a difference. That, like,
they weigh you as you go in and out of the store. You step on a scale.
Oh my gosh! You're heavier than I was sure that I was going to be caught.
Oh yeah, that's rough. Well,
I wonder how much.
Yeah, I wonder how many chocolate chips. Like, I wonder the grand total of, like, over your life, how many chocolate chips worth you actually stole? Probably like 25 cents.
I don't. Yeah, maybe. It was the principle though of like having stolen and having the guilt and remembering the guilt next time you want something.
Yeah.
Like, it's not worth it. I think it isn't. It's good.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
Kids should steal things.
I guess what we're saying is, please get out there and thieve it up.
What are you wasting your time?
Oh,
go
my God.
Go to it.
Spending money, spending your hard earned allowance. And so in terms of going to, being homeschooled, how did you have a sense? I know that you weren't interested in repeating your experience that you had when you were going up through sixth grade, but did you have any kind of a sense of, like, that you were missing anything or any kind of longing about the big kind of social life of high school?
No.
Which, by the way, I avoided like the plague. So.
Honestly, I didn't have. I had two friends in school that weren't really friends. Like, we never really got along. But we played together. I had one friend that was out of school, my mom's friend's daughter, Taryn. We grew up together. And, but a couple friends in school, but really not many. Not for any length of time, anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, your friends for like a year or something.
And you were traveling so much. And
not, I mean, at that time, I was in school all the way. Like, yeah. I was in it. I'd miss a week here and there.
But
seventh grade was my loner year. That was the first year I was homeschooled. And it was awesome because I'd gotten my parents grew up with horses and we had a little bit of acreage.
We were gonna get to the horse. Yeah, tell me your horse's name again.
Coco.
But
he so seventh grade was when I dug in with Coco, and that was that was a good year because we would do school. I'd be done by like noon or something, and then I'd go out at lunchtime, and I remember going out by myself, like finishing lunch, go outside by myself, and I'm business. Like, I'm going to mess around with Coco. He doesn't like it when I mess with his ears. I'm going to mess with his ears. He doesn't like it when I mess with his feet. I'm going to mess with his feet. I'm going to figure out how to do this. I'm going to saddle him. He doesn't like getting pulled away from the other horse. We're going to do that. We're going to do that a bunch. And I was like business time with Coco. And it was such a great relationship. I must have been like, we were 12 in seventh grade, right? So I think he passed away when I was 16 or 17. We had to put him down. But those 4 years were like a decade and a half. They were so great. Cool. So I would ride with him. I ride him all the time.
It was awesome. So good.
And it was like the independence that I learned from him and the relationship and the strength that I felt from like developing that relationship. The strength.
Welcome to every word out of my mouth. Every time I think I'm a smart, intelligent, well-spoken person, I listen to my own podcast for 5 seconds, and every other word out of my mouth is like,
yeah.
I don't know when that happened.
I remember my father giving me
endless reams of shit about it because he is so proper, and he's an English teacher and a writer and author. He would say to me, can you imagine if I wrote like in my books the amount of times that you say like in a sentence?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being so chagrined because I idolized my dad.
Yeah.
And yet somehow still I cannot get through without saying it as if it's an or a breath or a pause or anything
attached to
other
words.
You do not have that like I have that. So
Goodness.
Do not worry.
But anyway.
So you were like developing that relationship.
It was great.
With
like,
your horse.
It was this huge independence for me where I felt like I didn't, I wasn't missing friends. Didn't feel lonesome at all. It was just broing down with my horse. And it was so great. And I'd take care of him. And I felt like he was taking care of me. Like, it was a great relationship.
You really had. You had the sort of quintessential relationship with an animal that, I would just read about in books, but I didn't even, I wasn't even allowed to have.
I do believe that the horse and girl thing is a big deal. There's something about that strength that, I don't know what it was, probably many things, but I didn't ever really want to, I wasn't looking for a boyfriend or anything for a very long time. I think that's because I had a great relationship with my dad, but also that horse situation was just like, I already have that. Like,
yeah.
I have this big, strong thing that I can, who's my teammate, you know?
That's so cool.
It was really, really good for me. Really. Because I think I was about to jump ship. I was about to just like, fine, I'll be whoever you think I am. I'll do that. Whatever you want. I'll be that person for school's sake. For socializing.
When did you finally get interested in boys?
Well, I liked men. I liked, not to the point where I would ever want to do anything. I wasn't that active of a flirt. But I did not till my late teens was I seriously interested in curious, I think.
Would you have crush, so in your teens, playing music and stuff, would you have crushes on people that were older than you?
Yeah.
Opposed to like some guy at
I would have, I would adore people who are older than I am. I would like love people who are like men who are 30 and above.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Because I felt like they didn't pay attention to me. And they didn't,
you know, for better or for worse.
Yeah, maybe so. But like they just seemed real. Like they weren't talking down to me. They weren't trying to impress or didn't care. Like that's the other thing because they've got their own lives.
Yeah.
But everyone gets cooler when they're after 30, right? I mean, that's just kind of how it goes.
Guys, you have something to look forward to if you're not yet 30. Get ready to get extra
it's
cool.
It's pretty cool. I mean, you just stop caring about everybody else, and that's
by the way,
really
I
appealing.
Hear that that continues to happen in your 40s and 50s, too, that you just, the older you get, the more comfortable with yourself you are, and the more you're just, like, not wasting all of that time and energy wondering if you need to redefine yourself
to someone you're busy living rather than, like, thinking about it all.
Yeah. You get busy living, I get busy dying. Anytime I can pull that chestnut out.
But, in my teens, I had crushes on people, but I never had a boyfriend or anything. It wouldn't get into that. Because I was also very serious about it. Like, this isn't going to last. I wasn't in for a fling.
Yeah.
But then I think I was so intense on wanting something that wasn't just a stupid fling that I was like holding off for too long. And then I got petrified and paranoid. And then I was like, all right, we're just got to do this.
Yeah. It's so hard to know setting those timelines for yourself. And I mean, just to bring it into the present, I was just having that conversation with someone who's going, you know, going through a breakup. And obviously they know they for themselves, because it was a very important relationship to them, they have made the decision to not date for however long it feels like they need to not date. And,
it's like a fast.
And it is like a fast. And and that's a really great way of putting it, because the whole conversation we had was, you know, he was like, but when I'm ready, quote unquote, I'm also going to be so hungry. And I suppose I mean that in a sexual way also, just to get real, but also emotionally, if you've sort of made the decision to be emotionally and physically celibate so that you're working on yourself, then you sort of pat yourself on the back for that, because you don't just rebound and go into something else if you're afraid of being alone, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But that you then wonder, yeah, but am I going to have the presence of mind to really make great choices if I'm just eager to be intimate or even eager to find someone? Am I going to have the perspective that I, you know, to be able to take it slow? Or am I going to go the opposite direction, which you just described, which is, am I going to be so specific and I'm going to be so worried about the next step too, that I end up sort of starving myself even longer? It's tough.
It is tough. And I don't know that there's a right way to do it. I mean, balance is always a good thing to strive for. But for me, like, how do you know when you're in it? Like, what the right decision is. And then it gets like, it seems to get more and more critical. Like, especially when you're, if you are holding off on some decision. Like, the first time that I was that I kissed anybody, I had to ask them to kiss me because I was just like, this is not going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, I just got to get over with, because nobody seemed to be approaching me because I wasn't really presenting myself in that way.
Yeah.
Also, I was.
So, what was the situation? Can you give me a loose description of the circumstances upon which you were forced to say, "Will you kiss me?"
I had planned it. I knew it was going to happen because there's this guy who I knew wouldn't care, because he's kind of probably a slut. And And so I was just like, here's the situation. And he had dated my friend, and she was like, she's like, oh, you should totally get this guy. And I was like, here's the situation. Let's just get this over with. And he's like, totally, absolutely.
Where were you, though?
It was in New York.
At like a party or at like a...
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
And so that was fine. And then it was like, you know, a little while. Because the way that I flirt is by giving people a hard time. That's my kind favorite. Of the way. And I'm not like, I'm not super suggestive. I'm married now. So my style has changed a little bit. I like to give people a hard time.
I couldn't agree more. And I love giving a hard time back. And it's an interesting...
It's so fun.
It's an interesting gauge, too, because I think you learn a lot about someone by the way they tease. Because I think you can tell when someone... It's delicate, don't get me wrong, because you're risking the fact that they're going to take it a step too far and be just cruel.
Yeah.
Or that you're going to hurt their feelings because you don't know how much they can take. And I think that's very much in the comedy world, too, is there is this sort of gentle ribbing. And I was just talking to a girlfriend of mine who was like, I can't stand that. And she's one of the funniest people I know, but she was like, I can't stand that. To me, that's still hiding behind something. And I was like, I don't know what to say, but I promise you I'm not hiding anything. It's not about hiding anything for me. It's just about wordplay, and it's better for me than seeing someone across the room and just deciding they look good based on what pants they have on or whatever. I mean, to me, it's about, I think you can read a lot into good-natured ribbing versus like out and out, like there are sexy that, flirting.
Yeah,
I don't know what to do with that. I got nothing.
From her perspective, though, there are ways that I hide behind things that people probably don't have any idea I'm hiding. Like everyone hides behind things that are, you know, that keeps a barrier, keeps them safe. There are things like that. And I'm sure some people use teasing as a way to avoid being intimate in a genuine way.
Mm-hmm.
But in a you're just meeting and hanging out kind of scene, that's definitely the way that I preferred to. And so I think a lot of guys didn't really know what to do with that. And also, by that time, I was touring a lot. And so really the only people I met were at shows or working the shows. And so there was a weird imbalance.
And a weird temporariness to it all, I'm
imagining. Exactly, yeah. Totally. So then you start like kind of... it's a very strange way to start dating. But... and then somebody gave me the horrible advice of like, oh, well, if you want to kiss people, or if you want to have that kind of relationship with people, like you've got to drink. And I didn't really drink much at the time. It was horrible advice.
That's pretty bad advice.
It's horrible advice. I mean, it works, but it was really bad advice.
Yeah. Liquid really courage. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's just more than just this lack of responsibility kind of thing.
Lack of responsibility, and also, kind of a way to level playing field in a way that's not
like
that's
none not of, really fun. None of us really care about this, so we can just
There's like no investment in it, and it is sort of this like, oh, I'm so pleased that you really had a connection with this person that you were drinking with.
Right.
Cut to how much better and more interesting is it if you have that same connection with someone and you're not inebriated?
Yeah.
It's really a completely different ball of wax.
Yeah.
I get drunk on wax. Maybe I was not clear on that. I nibble on balls of wax. So I'm being very literal. I'm not being figurative when I say that. I'm glad we straightened that out.
But it's like there's, on the other hand, maybe I would have turned into a nun had I not.
I mean, I'm certainly not the last person to say, don't, for God's sake, do not drink and flirt with people. That is not what we're saying, but that's not the person who gives the advice that's a definitive answer. Yeah, exactly.
But,
hey, so I can't believe this, but we're already 50 minutes in, and I know we both have a hard out. I just like to use showbiz terms. So I'd love to do the fortune teller with you. This is a brand spanking new one. I've only used it, I think, maybe once or twice. Victoria sent it quite recently. I'll take a picture of this, guys, if anyone's curious. It is very cute and charming. It's the outside of the cootie catcher is colors, and so this has four little smiling braces, girl, JV logos in green, blue, red, and I guess we can call this yellow. It's kind of orangey,
like a mustard.
We can call it a mustard. If you want to pick mustard, I will happily spell mustard.
Mustard, please.
M-U-S-T-A-R-D, and a number.
6.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
2.
1, 2. I just want one more.
5.
Fiverr. Okay, the 5 question is, this is fun. Who did you look up to creatively, famous or not? Or you could have an answer of famous and not famous.
Who did I? Or
who did you look up to?
Who did I look up to creatively? Whether they were creatively. I mean, fiddle players. Nobody knows. Stuart Duncan is the best fiddle player.
Listen, we might have some real fiddle aficionados listening to this because they love you who know who that is.
Stuart Duncan, they will know. They will know. He is the best. And I'm trying to think. That's my elbow.
Wow. It sounded like, I don't know what. Do you have a plastic elbow?
Maybe. Maybe it's good. Maybe I
is
will.
Is that fiddler's elbow?
I will
have
it soon.
Oh my God, you have a bad case of fiddler's elbow. Oh, is that a thing?
It's a good case.
Is that a thing though?
Yeah, probably.
Like tennis elbow?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we get stuff. Who do I look up to creatively? You know what? My Aunt Joni is super creative. She...
What if you were like my Aunt Joni Mitchell? That's how I found out that you were related to Joni Mitchell. And then I just, a puddle of
she
pee.
She paints.
A puddle
and
of pee
poetry.
On the carpet. And I'm like, what?
I think she lives near here in the hills.
I pass out. Yeah.
No, my Aunt Joni, I used to write letters to her when I was young. We were pen pals, you know?
And she I'm sorry. Is it your mother's?
My
or
mom's sister. Older okay. sister. And she now lives next to my parents in my grandma's old house. Yeah, Joni. And she makes things like crazy. Like she's got these walnut shells and she's got little Dremel kits. And she'll make, you know, a mandolin out of a walnut shell. And
oh, I love it.
These little, you know, all kinds, hand carved. Everything is just hand done. She makes doll clothing and sews the tiny little, tiniest,
oh,
I mean, everything.
Tiny things.
And
I would love Joni.
She's the kindest, sweetest person.
Oh, that's a great answer.
Birds go to her. Like she's just...
She's Snow White.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Those are two really great answers. I say not knowing anything about fiddlers, but
thank
I'm
you.
Sure Stuart is
you can
phenomenal.
You can trust me on that one.
I completely and
there
totally
are few
trust
who would
you.
Disagree.
Let's do this thing that I've only done one other time. I did it on, what episode did I do it on? I cannot remember. Maybe Laura Keilinger. This is an exercise that Lucy Davis told me about that might be kind
exercise.
Of fun.
Exercise.
I know it sounds, suddenly I turned like actor inside the actor studio, but I'll tell you afterwards what all of this is supposed to mean. It's supposed to be just like a fun kind of like, I this is almost like in the back of a magazine kind of thing, but we'll see what you say. So first I want you to picture a desert.
Desert.
And that can mean whatever you want it to mean. It doesn't, it can be empty. It
an
can
emotional
be full
desert.
Of things. It can be, but it is a physical
desert.
It is an actual place.
Got it.
What is that? What are you picturing? What do you see when you think about a desert? And
sand with tiny sprigs of roughage coming
okay.
up.
Little bit of
not complete sand
brush.
Dunes. Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah, more barren than like a brushy desert. A little bit more barren, a little bit more there's some like tiny little low grasses.
Mm-hmm. What know? Color is it? Is it very beige or is it red or is it?
It's pretty beige.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Beige desert
brown
with
and
some little
browny green
some little grasses.
Foliage. Yeah.
Okay. Next I want you to picture a cube.
Is it going to reveal something about me?
It's supposed to, but
in public that
be,
I don't know yet.
Oh, please! It's not going to. It's not going to be anything like this. Is how sex is for you. It's not like that. It's a little bit like that, but it's not. It's not like that. It's not really like that. And also, like, who cares? But so a cube, you know, could be any kind of a cube. Is it translucent? Is it transparent? Is it colored? Is it big? Is it small?
It's blue. It's like an ice cube.
Oh, okay,
but mm-hmm. it's not an ice cube. It's just kind of a little bit darker than that.
Mm-hmm.
It's solid.
Is it soft edges? A little bit of
nope.
A, okay, it's solid, but it's small like an ice cube. But it's blue.
It's about the size of a softball.
Okay,
and it's maybe a little deeper than an ice cube. More like a deep water blue.
Mm, like beautiful. It sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it's really pretty. You should
as
see
I coax
it.
You, it sounds beautiful, doesn't it? Because I know what this is going to end up meaning. Okay, now I want you to picture a ladder. A ladder. What does it look like? Is it very, very tall? Is it leaning on something? Is it standing on its own? Is it on the ground? How do you?
Well, at first I pictured this aluminum ladder for construction that, you know, is like a doubled over. Mm-hmm. You can fold it in half or you can make it a giant fireman's ladder.
Mm-hmm.
Straighten it out. Okay. And then you said it's leaning on something, and I pictured a red ladder leaning on a tree. Which one do you think I should pick?
I like the red ladder leaning on the tree.
Okay.
So we're going to go with that. By the way, I'm not going to know how to interpret any of this stuff because I didn't come up with this. Now it's time for you to picture a horse. So do you picture...
I'm picturing, Coco? Not Coco. Okay. I'm picturing Missy, which is an Appaloosa.
Okay. Appaloosa is so beautiful.
Chestnutty red color with little spots on her
rump.
What's
her personality like?
She's kind of docile. She's a little old. And she used to have some spunk in her.
Isn't this your family's horse?
My mom's horse.
Yeah. Okay. Missy. All right. And then now
it's short for mischief. She's not really, she didn't have mischief. Much mischief in her after.
Okay.
In her later
I
life.
It's tricky when, I'll tell you in a second why it's tricky when you pick something that is like a real thing instead of like just some
image. Should I imagine
like
a horse?
Yeah, like an imaginary. It's I don't know, but like that. maybe you can imagine a
horse. I can do that.
Okay. What's the horse are you imagining?
He's, he is a gelding. He's like a yellow, I want to say, what are they called? Palomino.
Okay. All right. What's his personality like?
Oh, he's wild.
Nice.
He's spunky.
This is great.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I see this is a positive enthusiasm we have about this horse. Great. And now I'd like you to picture a storm.
Uh-huh.
How does that make you feel? Where are you in the storm? Are you out in it? Are you inside looking out at it? Do you enjoy it? Are you afraid of it? Is there lightning? Is there rain? What kind of storm is it for
you? The storm is happening in the desert that we spoke of earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And the storm is whipping up all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of trash and stuff being like whipped around.
Windy, whipping.
My hair's getting whipped around.
Yeah. Is it raining?
It's exciting. Not yet.
Okay, so it's just windy. It's the dry wind before a rain.
Before the storm. But
are you hearing thunder? Or are you seeing lightning?
Oh, yeah, there's thunder coming.
How do you feel about being out in it?
I'm excited.
You're into it. I love it. Okay, so. Well, I've unlocked the secret to your soul. This is what Lucy told me. So the desert is supposed to be how you perceive your life. Now, I don't know what to do with that because, like, if you just say your life is completely barren and empty, then what does that mean? Versus you said, like, you didn't have bad feelings about it. You weren't like, it's lonely and empty. You were just like, it's very placid.
It was sparse.
It's beige. And then there are these little shoots of grass coming up in it.
Simple.
There you go. I mean, like I said, I really don't know. So now it becomes up to you to interpret everything. Mm-hmm. The cube is how you see yourself. So words that you described were deep, beautiful, I think you said.
I'm maybe amazing.
It was more opaque. It wasn't something you could see right through. So maybe you're not so easy to just get to know, like through an exercise like this.
You don't know me.
And I also love the color blue. So that's your cube. Your ladder is how you see your friends. So as you can imagine, I thought it was a little more friendly to have a red ladder leaning against a tree, which is very sweet.
Yeah. But my first picture was more practical.
It was very practical too. But you know what? That's very practical. You're a practical person.
Yeah.
Either way, so the horse is how you see your partner. So that's why I said it was tricky to picture Missy because that's probably not your husband, but you did. How do you feel that the gelding that you described, is there a sense of your husband's personality in it?
I love that I clarified that he was a gelding. Why did I feel the need to say that? He was. Maybe I've gelded him.
Oh, there you go. You know that you can trust him because he's not going to be out there like a wild man, but he still has, it's like a tamed passion.
Yeah.
I like that.
I'll go with that.
And then the storm is how you perceive difficulties. So you're out in the middle of it. You're ready for it. It's exciting. Things are blowing around and you're not shirking away from it. You're not running from it. It's interesting that it's windy. It's not raining. Again, I don't know what any of this means. So you can interpret that however you see fit. But what do you think about that? How can we play that into you perceiving difficulties? Like the fact that it's a storm and there isn't even rain yet.
Well, I love wind. I really love wind. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's God kissing me.
Adorable.
I love
God wind. Blowing trash around in the desert at you.
I love it. I do. Yeah. I love the chaos of it.
This house gets really windy and the sound of that bamboo swaying back and forth in the wind is so like, something so great about it.
I bet. It's amazing. Yeah. Yeah. You've
lots
got a
of
great,
trees for
a
lots
great
of wind,
wind
sounds.
House.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bet you get some creaks and things.
Oh, it's very... There for sure, like things have blown from other yards, like umbrellas into my yard, and my outside chairs are aluminum, so they actually get blown across the deck when it's really windy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's a big deal. Yeah. It's a big to do.
I think I like wind and storms because I feel like ultimately I've never been in the kind of storm that makes me feel like I could die.
Mm-hmm.
I've not been super close to tornadoes.
Me where neither. Enough, I'm terrified of tornadoes.
Enough where it's like, oh, I could die. Like, we've been up close, but nothing like that. So I have the advantage of not having any real... And I also have this weird feeling in me always that, like, if it hasn't happened to me yet, it probably won't happen. Mm. Like... If I haven't hit my head on that thing yet, I probably won't ever hit my head on that thing.
Yeah.
Which is not true at all. It's just a way like of me not being worried. It's just, I'm a wreck because of that. I run into things. I walk into walls. I'm like.
But you're a wreck in the way that you, first of all, I am too. And I think I might have a little bit of what you described. But it also doesn't eat up the room in your mind of you always anticipating or agonizing that it's something that might happen.
I'm not worried about things that don't happen typically. So I like storms because I feel like ultimately everything's going to be fine. It's kind of exciting because I see all this chaos, but there's still a little confidence in where you stand kind of thing.
I think that makes perfect sense, particularly given what we now know about what the storm signifies. Okay, so that I think was a smashing success. I'm very, very pleased with the outcome. Now I'm going to move into our final game of the day. My personal favorite, I would say many of the listeners' personal favorites, is the MASH game.
Ah, the MASH game.
So we're going to play some MASH. Everything, I have come up with nothing in advance, so I'm trying to think of some things based off the conversations that we had. If you could have three instruments that it would be lovely if you could just be extraordinarily gifted at tomorrow without having to have learned them?
Piano.
Great.
Pedal steel.
Mm-hmm.
And
I like that you're looking around in case I have some errant instruments lying around that you can't play.
Let's do the saw.
Oh, ooh, that would be fun.
Be kind of cool, right?
Oh, I will say quickly that the closest thing I have that sounds like a saw in my life right now is that dog, Whitley. Whitley is a husky, and one of the things that I've heard about huskies that turned out to be true and is not true of Scott is that she sounds like a human being when she is trying to get attention, and she's getting used to her crate, and she's actually really great in it, and it's not, I don't want anyone to be like, it's so cruel to crate dogs. I promise you, it's her little den. It's her little den. But when she is being in her, when she's in her crate and I leave the room, she's definitely like, she's a rescue. She's kind of working through her separation anxiety and stuff. We're doing a lot of work together. It's going very well. But her moans could not sound more like they're going to eventually become words. I mean, they're so close to words. I mean, try to do an impression, but it sounds a little bit like a saw. It sounds a little bit like this. I swear to God. I'm going to try to record it.
Is she doing that with her paws? Like, the gesture? He's like,
Oh, my God. I think I did try to record it.
Oh, my
God. I'm going to look at my voice memos really
quickly. She didn't really respond when you were doing
that. So yeah, I don't know that, like, I don't know that it's, like, her language, but... Let me see if I...
It's a whale.
Oh, that's her banging on her crate. I was hoping for...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Can't you?
Yeah, yeah. I can... Look, it sounds like she's saying, help me. Gosh. I can't
take
that.
Isn't that amazing?
Sound. Yeah.
It's a horrible sound. I mean, it's horrible. Don't get me wrong. But now, but like, because I know that she's fine.
No, I mean, it's horrible because you personify it.
Yeah, she's fine. But anyway, that was, I'm glad that we were able to throw that in there. Okay. What about communicating with three animals? If you could communicate, say, telepathically with three different animals, what would they be?
A stag.
Ooh. Love it.
A horse.
Mm-hmm.
A ferret.
Mm-hmm. May have misspelled ferret. Great job, Janet. What about three? Did you read a lot as a kid?
Not a lot. I read a little bit.
Films? What were you, like, what imaginary worlds, if any, were you interested in?
My imaginary world. Okay. Yeah.
So.
But I did read. I read a little bit.
Because I'm gonna give you the option of creating or stepping into three worlds that don't really exist. They could be something from film, like if you wanted to go to Middle Earth because you enjoy Hobbits or Star Wars or whatever you used to imagine as like this sort of magical place you would go. But I just want three.
A circus?
Love it.
I think if you just put the wooded mountain.
I knew it. I just felt that coming. Because that's how I feel about woods and forest.
Yeah.
There's nothing like it.
Oh, yeah.
Wooded mountain. I've got it and I love it. Did you ever have a desire to sort of be under the water, like in the sea, since you grew up, like to be able to sort of be a mermaid or to be able to sort of communicate or be,
yeah, with the fishes
in that way, yeah,
yeah. You got to put it underwater world.
Yep, in there. Underwater world.
Just taking it might it be a fresh step water
the
though.
Boogie boarding.
It might be a lake, huh?
Lake water.
Yeah. Yep.
I like that better too. I feel the same. Okay. Next category will be. If you could have played with any musician, living or dead, three.
Oh, man. Play with any musician, living or dead. I feel like this is a cred thing.
Oh,
I feel like I have to impress like somebody. You.
No, not at all.
Play with any musician. I'd like to play with Tom Waits.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I finish this, I'm going to drive away and I'm going to think of all these great
examples. I know, that's how this is. Everybody knows this is just off the cuff because I don't let anyone plan in advance.
Ray Charles.
Oh, love it.
And let's get Mavis Staples in there.
Love it. Credibility-wise, you've done very well for yourself, so no need to worry on that count.
What a relief.
What about three places in the world that it would be really lovely to have maybe a second home, like a vacation home?
Ooh, a vacation home. Alaska.
I'm dying to go Alaska. I've never been.
Oh, it's.
I cut out the two and said I'm dying to go Alaska. Like I went all Alaska on your ass.
It's so great. How about the French countryside, a French villa?
I'm in.
An instrument I would like to play would be the language of French. I would like to know French.
I'll go languages next. So okay. I'm going to go languages. Let me just put down French to remind myself.
And then, let's go south somewhere. How about somewhere in South America? Let's do Patagonia.
Great one. Everybody knows Patagonia is great. Up to and including the clothing. Okay, so languages. I've got French. Two other languages you'd like to be able to speak fluently.
Two other languages. I would like to speak Swedish. You know,
great. Perfect.
Keep in the family.
Why not? Yeah.
It's true. And then Icelandic or something. Oh, no. I think I should speak a Gaelic thing because nobody speaks that.
Yeah.
Let's go with I'd like to speak Scottish.
Love it. I would too. That'd be so cool. Okay. How about three ways of transporting yourself through space that are not the conventional like automobile kind of option?
Right. So the rocket, of course, the rocket
naturally.
On your back.
Naturally. Oh, the rocket pack. Got it.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there could be a giant pogo stick.
Love it.
Right?
You know what I was just thinking I wish that, because someone said jet ski recently. I do like the experience of being on a boat and the right circumstances, but it takes so long. I wish if there was like a way for a boat to be as fast as like teleporting, but still
Part
to enjoy
the boat. Experience of being on the boat is
the
being on the boat. It's not to get somewhere.
You're totally right.
It's not a mode of transportation.
I take it back. That wasn't for you anyway. That was just me musing about myself.
Okay, so through space. The wings of a bird, right? Wings of an eagle.
Love it. Oh, eagle wings specifically. Great. perfect. Look, I know that you're happily married. So if you decide that you can't handle this category.
I'm pretty sure I can.
Thanks for taking some real time to think about that. I would like to invite you to list three crushes, I guess preferably celebrity. They could be alive, they could be dead, they could be a younger version of them, an older version of them, anything like that. Three that you could, you know, enjoy one of these getaways with.
Robert Redford.
Love it. Any specific era?
Oh gosh. I don't know when the movie that I'm thinking of was made.
Mm-hmm, but just what movie?
It was like a spy movie or something.
Sneakers?
I think it was Sneakers.
Might be. With like Sidney Poitier and River Phoenix was in it and
was that like 80s?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he was still super sexy and great. Not that he's not now.
And then, I mean, there's also Robert Duvall in Lonesome Dove. I like men, see, right?
Love it. Yep, Robert Duvall, Lonesome Dove.
There are other people I could mention, but I don't want them to... they live in this town. I don't want to...
Yeah, we'll keep it at a distance and like back in time a little bit.
Let's do that.
Got Robert Duvall, I've got Robert Redford. That's two Roberts.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry to be taking some time here.
No, that's really okay.
I feel like there's a good answer to this. And
You know who I had like a wicked crush on pre and post, but this really hit it home for me, was Keith Carradine when he was on Deadwood. But young Keith Carradine, he is so adorable to me, even with his giant teeth. Again, not telling you what you have to do.
No,
but this is my opportunity to give a shout out to Keith Carradine because I do not believe I've brought him up before.
That's a good opportunity. That's good.
I've taken it.
I would say Kris Kristofferson.
That's great. It's not that far off from who I just said. I mean, in no way do they look alike, but they could easily have been in a movie together.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and say that right now. Okay, this is great. I'm going to go ahead and have you tell me when to stop. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Okay. Pausing, returning with what can only be described as your imminent future. I'm excited and distracted because Sarah brought me a CD because I'm going to play one of her songs at the end of this episode. So I'm super, super excited about that. But before I lose myself in my excitement about that, I need to report in.
Yes.
On some things.
I'm anxiously awaiting.
It's all good because you gave such good options.
I did. You know,
you can't lose.
I really didn't try to give myself too much to feel like
you can't lose. Here's your reminder that you have to leave, and so do I. Okay. You don't know how to play the saw. I apologize for that. Mm. Again, I never know where to start, but I'm going to go ahead and say that you live in a shack now. It's not a huge deal because your shack is your second.
Options.
I know, because that's MASH. MASH is mansion, apartment, shack, or house. So that's
I did not say in. That I wanted to live in a shack.
Sadly, it's built in. It's built
it's
in.
Okay, that goes with the simplicity.
Well, it does. But listen to this too. It makes sense to me because I think you have this beautiful rural camping-like cabin shack in Patagonia.
Oh, cool.
What are you going to have? Some mansion in the middle of the...
Nope.
No, you need to have that sort of magical experience.
Yeah, it's a fixer-upper.
This is a fixer-upper. And also, a lot of the time, I think that you're at the this, we're going to say, kind of ranch in Patagonia. You're also spending time chilling with all the underwater life in a beautiful crystalline lake.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be fantastic right there.
That'll be great.
You pop out of there, and there's probably a horse waiting for you to take you back to the ranch, and you guys have a little exchange because you can understand what they're thinking.
Dude!
You guys can communicate with each other.
I'm so excited about this.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I'm also very excited about it. Now, maybe when you get back to your ranch shack, you do a little practicing of one of your many musical gifts, in this case, pedal steel.
Ooh.
So that you can get ready for your gig with Mr. Ray Charles.
Okay.
Kind of sensational and amazing.
I got really excited about that.
I seriously doubt, all due respect to Mr. Charles, that he speaks Gaelic, Scottish. But you do.
Yeah.
So whether or not it's, you're able to have that conversation with him. It's something
I can bring to our relationship. I mean, we're not romantic, but...
Yeah. Just you can, you know what? He dug it all. He would get it.
Yeah.
He would appreciate it. And if he doesn't, then I feel certain that Lonesome Dove era Robert Duvall... Your sweetheart
totally gets it.
Totally gets it. And the two of you flit around on the wings of an eagle. So if that's not your next song, she set the microphone down. You guys,
I meant to drop it.
That's how satisfied she was.
It landed on it on the cushy.
Something very soft, so it wasn't as dramatic as it could have been.
This is,
congratulations.
This is fantastic.
Such good times.
You know what's amazing is how actually joyful I feel right now.
That's my favorite thing about MASH, is that I sincerely feel it lifts the spirits of the person.
My spirits
who plays
are
it.
Lifted on the wings of an eagle with Robert Duvall.
Good stuff. Ugh. Good stuff. Sarah, I'm so thrilled that you did the podcast. I've had so much fun, and I can't wait to play one of your songs. And thank you so much for bringing me a CD.
Yeah.
And
I didn't know you wanted to play one. I just.
I'm so excited, and you can tell me if you have a preference of what you think would be a fun one to put on the end of this, and then in the intro when I record it, I'll give all the info on how to get the song and CD for one's own.
I think
if it's available yet,
there's a role, yeah, it totally is.
Great.
I think I want you to play this song called "You and Me" because it is. I wrote it thinking about how you changed throughout your life.
Yeah.
And
oh,
how
perfect.
You're looking, a lot of times now I look back, I'm 32, but I look back on these different phases and how I was somebody kind of different, and I was with somebody who was, you know, unique to that stage of my life.
Absolutely.
And sometimes they're like family, friends, who grandpa figures, and sometimes they're relationships or friendships or anything.
I'm really relieved you didn't say lovers, because we both would have had to tease you about that. Sometimes they're lovers. It's not a word I'm comfortable with. I'm so excited about that. Okay, that's perfect. Obviously, that is perfect. JV Club fodder. You just put it back in your purse, so I hope you're planning on giving it to me after all. She changed her mind after I said lover. Thank you so much, Sarah. People can follow you on Twitter.
Twitter and all the stuff.
And all Facebook, that good stuff. I think you're just at Sarah Watkins. Right?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Keep it simple, like me.
Right.
At Jana Varney. Okay, guys. We will talk to you next time on the podcast. Sarah, thanks again.
Thank you.
I remember the night, I remember the sound, I remember the light, when the moon came around, the night flowers bloomed, the air so sweet, I remember you, I remember me, Central Valley sunshine, burn out of town, make your head all funny, so you I remember you.
leaving Nerdist.com.